The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand, who recently welcomed 17 new pharmacies to the All Care family.
Yes, good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. If you want to contact the programme, as always, it's 51551 for your text, or you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, we had a huge reaction to our interview yesterday with Kirsten Chadwick. If you weren't listening, Kirsten told us the tragic story of her fiancé, Kim Martin, who is a scuba diver from Canada. Kirsten's from Canada as well. And he travelled to Ireland back in August to dive around the Lusitania off the coast of Cork. And on his way back up to the surface of the water, something happened and he came up too fast. And as a result, he's paralysed from the chest down. And he's in hospital over in the University Hospital in Galway. And Kirsten was on to tell the tragic story and how she hopes to repatriate, came back to Canada. And they've set up a GoFundMe page. And I'd just like to say thanks on Kirsten's behalf, because there was a huge reaction overnight to the GoFundMe page. They have to get an air ambulance, which is very expensive. Kirsten was telling us that it could be 80,000, 90,000 euro. If they manage to get somebody on a return trip, they're able to split the cost and it could be down as far as 40,000, which is great. The GoFundMe page is Kim Martin's Road to Recovery. And it was a tragic story, made worse, I suppose, by the fact that when Kim was supposed to return to Canada and Kim and Kirsten were supposed to get married in the middle of August, and of course that didn't happen, and Kirsten has been here for the last 7 weeks and 2 days now. And we were on to our colleagues in Galway, and they say that Theresa Mannion is doing a report on Kirsten and Kim's story tonight for the 6-1 News. So you will hear it again. Kim Martin's Road to Recovery is the GoFundMe page that you can help if you wish to do. And loads of people did, and they mentioned that they heard Kirsten on the show, which was lovely. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Just before I go any further, just a reminder that tomorrow night the telly, we're there. It's a great lineup actually tomorrow night. We've Patsy Palmer. Patsy Palmer is on with us tomorrow night. Who's Yes, Patsy, who plays Bianca on EastEnders. She's coming in to have a chat. We have Codaline frontman Steve Garrigan and his girlfriend Diana Bonici. And they are the faces, the ambassadors for Walk in My Shoes mental health campaign this year. So Steve will be on and Diane will be on talking about their struggles with their own mental health, particularly Steve, who suffered with panic attacks in the past. Michael Harding, always welcome into Studio 4, is on to talk about his new book. And Beth Doherty, who was here last week or the week before, talking about climate change. Beth is 16. She'll be on the show. So too will Alicia O'Sullivan and Jack O'Neill, who were in New York last weekend for the UN Youth Climate Summit. And Alicia met Greta Thunberg, and she'll be on to talk to us about that and what we should be doing and why we should be scared and all of that. That's on tomorrow. And this is a fascinating story. I'm really looking forward to meeting this woman, Michelle Burke. She's an Australian woman, and her husband died 5 years ago. And between them over the years, they had a sort of some people would call it warped, other people would call it black sense of humour. Paul, the husband's name, and he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And they were chatting, obviously, about when he was gone, and they'd plans to travel around the world. They'd only been as far as New Zealand. Michelle was going, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "You should still travel around the world." And then Michelle said, "Okay, I will, but I'll bring you with me as a cardboard cutout." And he said, "Yeah, good idea." So that's what she's doing. She's travelling around the world with a cardboard cutout of her dead husband, and she's on the show tomorrow, and she's a fascinating lady, so looking forward to that. And Paul Carrick from Mike the Mechanics is on to sing for us. That's a good old lineup tomorrow. You can feel the change, can't you? You can feel the change. It's a bit chillier now, and we're talking about soups and comfort food. I see that one of the comfort foods that's very popular in Australia is I've never heard this before. I've heard of beans on toast, and I've heard of spaghetti hoops on toast. But what they do is that they put it in the middle between two. It's a sandwich of toasted beans. They call it a jaffle. And then they put cheese on as well. So you can imagine, you know, one slice of bread toasted, then you put the beans, and then you put the toast on, then you put it under the grill, melt the cheese into the beans, then put your other slice of toast on top, and then and the tomato sauce going all down your chin and everything, and then there's the cheese and the beans all wrapped up together. Yum. I was surprised the other evening, actually. I came in Monday evening, or maybe it was Tuesday evening, and very unlike our house, but Jenny had prepared, listen to this now, listen to this, mashed potatoes, onion, gravy, and sausages. Yum! There's what you want. There's what you want. Particularly yesterday. I don't know if it was raining where you were, but we had monsoon-type downpours in Dublin, and it seemed to go on forever, just at that time when people were leaving work. So there's a lot of wet people yesterday. So what's your comfort food? What's your particular food that you look forward to on those cold winter evenings? Is it soup? Is it onion gravy and sausages? Do you know what I've been doing recently? Caramelising onions. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. It takes about a half an hour, but my word, is it worth it? And if you're making a burger, and you know, some people say, oh no, it has to be the raw onions for me, right? A bit of crunch. But if you caramelise your onions, yum, 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 because it brings out all the sweetness in the onion and it's just delicious. So you just, you know, gently heat them for about a half an hour, and then at the end you add a little bit of balsamic vinegar and a bit of sugar, and delicious, delicious, delicious. On food, restaurants. Here's the thing. Restaurant music. How do you feel about that? Well, somebody wrote into the Examiner and they weren't too pleased with the music that was played in a restaurant they attended recently. And it reads as follows. Dear sir, madam, why oh why must every place have to play awful pop music? I say awful because most of it is just a continuous thumping jungle music beat, a most annoying irritation, unrelated to any type of recognisable melody or tune. Gone are the days when a singer or a song can be easily recognised. Recently we went into a fairly posh restaurant, not cheap by any means, with lovely sea views. As more people entered, the volume of the music went up, with the result of us having to shout to be heard. I would have left the place gladly, but we had friends with us. Again, I seemed to be the only person annoyed with the eardrum intrusion. Our young friends were amused at my unease. It showed in my face, you see. I tried to explain to the younger couple that a restaurant was at one time considered an almost sacrosanct place akin to a library, a place where voices were supposed to be lowered, almost whispered. Ah, they said in unison, that was 40 years ago. Today it's different. Noise is everywhere. Unfortunately, I replied, I know only too well, music should be in the background, non-intrusive, if at all. Why are older people not considered anymore? It now seems as if the younger noise merchants have the control button almost everywhere. Restaurants, bars, filling stations, beach bars and shops. There seems to be a consensus that the old fogies, in inverted commas, don't count anymore. And the merchants of noise, I love that, the merchants of noise. Great name for a band. The merchant of noise feel they must fill any peaceful space with their brand of hacksaw music. That should be hacksaw, I suppose the hacksaw. As if the sound of silence will kill them and everybody else. You see, what has happened is, and I don't know if people understand this, back in the day, you only had the choice of a CD or a CD. You know, so there was a time, say, in the, was it the 90s? Late 80s, early 90s, when every restaurant... Every restaurant had, the Bonavista Social Club, and that was played on loop, or they might have had this one. Yeah. Perfect restaurant music, Nora Jones... That sold over 100,000 in Ireland, and most of them must have been to restaurant owners.
Wait until I saw the sun.
And you can imagine Nora sitting in the corner playing the piano. That's the whole thing. Or they might have had that terrible Muzak thing, you know, James Last doing a version of a great old song, like Heart of Gold or something. See, we look back in those days and we probably think maybe that was nicer. You see, everyone can do their own playlist now on Spotify, or maybe let Spotify do it for them. And all sorts of things come out, you know. You see, and they may have started with something like this. But it ends up with that. See, I know a little bit about this because I used to put together CDs for restaurants. So I know a little bit about it. And the thing is, and I'm completely with the letter writer to the Irish Examiner, music should be in the background. It should be non-intrusive, inoffensive, nothing that will, you know, there should be the odd song that you recognise. Even if it's an acoustic version of a song you might know, playing in the background, and the odd time if the conversation drops, you might say, oh, that's nice. Now, who's that, I wonder? That's a nice version of that song, you know.
Never made it as a wise man. Couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing. Tired of living like a blind man.
Or you might have some lovely, you know, contemporary instrumental. But yeah, ban electronic dance music from restaurants, that's what I say. An old curmudgeon that I am of a Friday afternoon. They get enough of that everywhere else they go. Well, keep it out of restaurants. Keep it out of restaurants. Nice and gentle, nice and gentle, nice and gentle, nice and gentle. That's Maria Doyle Kennedy for your information and her version of Nickelback's How You Remind Me. Now, what else is there? It's been going all week. We sort of dipped into it there on Wednesday. The sayings, it's on the back of an article, I think it was by Paul Clements, Irishman's Diary in the Irish Times, and he was writing about your man Dunbar's character in whatever, Line of Duty, and he said, up the laggin in a bubble. So they've been people have been writing in their colloquialisms all week, and we got a number of them in that we didn't get to. So what about this one? The saying for someone who doesn't know what they're up to. You know, so the son is off at university or whatever, and then the neighbour goes, how's he getting on? And the dad replies, he's like a dog looking into a field of thistles. No clue what's going on. And what about this one? This came in from a County Wexford texter. Nearly never bull the cow. Meaning nearly is not the job done. Nearly never won the race. Wasn't that the one we used to use down in Kildare? My mother had a great old saying, if you get the name of an early riser, you could lay in bed all day. Aha, that's a good one, isn't it? Martina sent that one in. So I think the message there is, if you get the name to be one thing, that you could do the opposite, but still people would think you were the one thing, if you know what I mean. If you get the name of an early riser, you could lay in bed all day. So there. One other letter that we spotted today, and we will be talking to those young climate change activists tomorrow, and it's all talk of recyclable and compostable and all that. And somebody writes to the Irish Times today, say, imagine if every household in Ireland reverted to using bars of soap. How many plastic dispensers would no longer be needed? I'm starting with baby steps. Yeah, remember, we used to use that Imperial leather soap, and then there was the carbolic soap, and there was a time when that's all people used. And I was thinking about it today, and bar of soap, and then I thought about the shower, and then I thought about what do you do with the soap, and then I thought about other people using the soap, and then I thought about bits of hair stuck into the soap, and I thought about where the hairs come from, and then I got very uncomfortable with the whole thing. Very uncomfortable with the whole thing. I suppose the way forward is that you have some sort of glass dispenser, or even plastic dispenser, attached to the wall of your shower, and then you refill it. So you're not having that single-use plastic going on and on and on. Do you still use soap? 51551ray@rte.ie. Camilla Sullivan, shower gel or soap? Are you a shower gel or soap type person?
Both, actually.
You'll have to use that microphone as well.
Sorry, wandering around aimlessly. Both. I love them both.
You love them both, right. Okay, we won't quiz you too much on your shower activity. How are you?
I'm grand. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thanks so much for coming in. You're in the Olympia Theatre with your band on the 19th of October, and you dragged Fergal in today. How are you doing, Fergal? Fergal's on piano. And you're going to perform for us twice today.
Yeah.
And we get a chance to talk before the second performance, I would imagine.
Cool.
So you're a great interpreter of songs. So you interpret. Last time you were in, you did a Nick Cave song for us or two?
Yes. And this gig is going to be a lot of Nick Cave in it, because we've got a CD that we're launching with his songs.
Okay.
And then other artists like Cohen and Brell and Radiohead and stuff like that.
And you met Nick Cave at Shane McGowan's 60th birthday party.
Yeah, I've met him before, actually. I've had dinner many years ago with him and Shane, but it was the one time as a Cork girl I couldn't speak, you know, like, do you want to sing? I was like, no way. So it was amazing, and that was an incredible evening. That was really emotive.
It does beg the question, Camilla, has he ever heard you sing one of his songs?
I think he has, but he kind of mentions it, but I'm just like, I've got my ears closed.
Don't hear, don't want to know.
So he's always been really lovely, and he said, I love this version or whatever, so.
Okay, so it's not a Nick Cave song, it's a Leonard Cohen song you're going to sing for us right
now.
We'll
do a Cave one later for
great.
Him,
so. Okay, what are you going to sing for us first?
This one is called Anthem.
When you are ready.
That's how the light gets in.
Wow! Wow, that was amazing.
Thank
She's this. I love this Irish attitude. This is a text. She still got a Ray.
Thanks be to God.
So as if along the way you might have lost it. She's still got it.
I have.
She's still got it. That's a lovely cover version. Oh, perfect for any
thank
restaurant.
Thank you so much.
That was beautiful, Camille. You're going to stay with us and sing us out at the end of the programme and we'll get a chat. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Fergal. Thank you. You can leave now if you want to go. There's a bank I know, so somebody that plays nothing but ABBA all day for the last... Of course they would. Yeah. They'd be playing that all day, wouldn't they? In a bank. In a rich man's world. Thank you. On comfort food, I saw a guy at a deli counter one morning getting a breakfast roll with beans. He was getting into a van. How in the name of whatever did he eat it? I asked the girl who served him what was the most unusual request she ever had to put in a roll. She said, a steak and kidney pie mashed up. That's not right, is it? Soup, vegetable and chicken soup all winter long, says that person. My comfort food is good cottage pie or lamb's juice, says Mary. And a boiled jacket potato. Let it go cold, peel it, chop it and fry it. Then add some chopped onions and fry them together. Grilled rashers and have them with it. Yum, says Reg. Afternoon, Reg. And those Jaffles things, as in the baked beans with cheese, toasty. They used to sell those in the canteen when I was in college in the UK. They were delicious. And have you ever had pork Stilton and celery sausage or venison and wild mushroom? I haven't. That's from Owen DeRossi. He says they're beautiful. And on the noise in restaurants, there's a bar somewhere in Ireland, I won't name and shame them. They play music while the TV is on loud, and at weekends, there's a live band blaring out the back. So you have the TV, the music, and the band. That's noise pollution. I think that soap bars transfer infection from hand to hand, but I use carbolic soap to get stains out of clothes. It's brilliant, says Moira. And we've just started to use soap in our house and even a bar of shampoo. I'm not enjoying it. It was great travelling recently, though, Audrey in Ringsend. Oh, when you use the travelling, is that it? It's soap all the way for me. So many nice fragrances. We'll all have to go with soap, I think. I think increasingly that's what's happening with the shower gel, that you get it in a big thing and then you put it into some receptacle at home attached to your shower, so you don't have the plastic bottle every time you have to replace your shower gel. I think that's the way it's going. They're looking for you to represent Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest. It could be you after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Lovely text coming in about Camille O'Sullivan. Well, the good news is that Camille will be back before the end of the programme. Would she be the type of person who should be representing us in the Eurovision Song Contest? Well, RTE are looking for songwriters and performers to enter the Eurovision Song Contest in 2020. It'll be in Holland. RTE's executive producer of entertainment, Michael Keeley, is on the line to tell us more. How are you doing, Michael?
Good afternoon, Ray. How are things?
Good. Right. So what are we going to do next year? We haven't won it in 23 years, and before that we won it 7 times. So if you're under 25, you've no experience of Ireland winning the Eurovision Song Contest, Michael.
No, that's true. But in a way, Ray, it's a completely different contest now to the one it was back in the 90s when we were winning it so many times.
Right.
It's nearly twice the size. There's over 40 countries involved every year. Back then there were less than about 25. There was a rules around who could sing in English. There were only two countries allowed to sing in English. That was the UK and Ireland. Maybe three, sorry. I think Malta was allowed to sing as well. Mm. Everybody else had to sing in their own language.
Yes.
So those rules have changed. They've introduced different types of voting. You know, so it's a different
competition. It is different. But you know more than most. It's not that we're not winning. We're not doing well at all.
Well, it's
been a sort of dramatic fall from grace.
Yeah, I think our experience actually is more typical now of the average country that takes part.
Okay.
I mean, if you in fairness now to Sarah did a great job this year. I mean, I wouldn't for a moment take that away from her, despite the fact that the result wasn't great from our point of view. But last year, Ryan O'Shaughnessy did well, got to the final and came 16th. So, you know, so we qualify, we don't qualify, we didn't qualify for a few years before that. But that is fairly typical now of how most countries, small countries I'm talking about, like ours, who don't have an awful lot of resources to plough into it.
And you've tried various things over the years, like when I was presenting Eurostar, the winner of that went and represented us in the Eurovision Song Contest. You've tried where you had one singer and four songs, and all. So what's the plan this year?
Well, in a way, it's kind of similar to what we've been doing for the last few years. Unfortunately, other countries like Sweden or whatever have big, huge competitions where they're like Eurostar-style competitions, but they involve, they're much bigger in scale than we are able to put on. Unfortunately, we haven't been in a position to do a kind of a separate standalone show in the last few years. So what we've been doing is we've been having an open call out for songs and artists. So anybody who wants to send us a song can do so, or anybody who wants to put themselves forward as an artist can do so. And we will, this year we're doing it in conjunction with 2FM, which obviously is a young youth audience, and that is the main audience of Eurovision. So we're going to employ the resources of our colleagues in 2FM to help us select an act and a song.
It's odd you haven't done it before now, I suppose. And you're trying to encourage established performers and songwriters to get involved.
Well, the reason for that, to be honest, is there is a kind of a popular perception here, and it's an entirely false one, that somehow this Eurovision is a great place to start a career, or if, you know, it's a kind of an amateur competition. The fact is, it's the biggest live music show in the world. It's the biggest professional song contest in the world, and it attracts top professionals from around Europe and from around the globe. So other countries tend to send their biggest stars. So like Russia would send, you know, a singer that would already be well known throughout the Russian speaking world. Likewise, you know, the Greeks might send somebody who'd be well known in you know, southeastern Europe.
Yeah, and then we sent poor
we're up against
Sarah
them, you know?
McTiernan.
Yeah, well, I mean,
who are you talking about? Who would be your dream person? Like, are you looking for, I don't know, Glenn Hansard, Declan O'Rourke, or are you looking for Codaline, or are you looking for the Fontaines DC, or who are you looking for to go?
It's very hard to say until you hear the song with the combination of artists, you know. So it's hard to say if you just send Glenn over there. I mean, Glenn's a fantastic performer, there's no doubt about it. He's one of my favourite performers that this country has ever produced. You mentioned Camille. Camille is amazing, amazing singer and amazing performer. There's a synthesis between the ideal song and the ideal act, and then you also have to have a kind of a momentum behind you as well, you know. So,
and here's a brilliant story. I'll give it to you now. You can go away, and I won't charge you for it. Right?
Okay.
We had Mary Kennedy sitting beside us, and at the end of the interview, she just let it sort of slip out that she is Dermot Kennedy's auntie. I didn't know that. Right?
I knew that.
Now Mary Kennedy presented the Eurovision for us. Imagine her nephew going to represent our country. They'd love it. The Eurovision fans all over the world, all over Europe, would love that sort of little story. And Dermot is brilliant and he's huge. I doubt that he'd do it for you, would he? Or would he?
Do you know what? I don't know. I love Dermot Kennedy, but one of the good things about our getting our colleagues in 2FM involved is that Dermot Kennedy was one of the artists that came up through the 2FM Rising thing that they have going over there. So I'm hopeful that with the involvement of 2FM, we could find, if Dermot doesn't do it, somebody who would be equally as exciting.
Okay. So rte.ie/Eurovision, performers, songwriters, and the closing date is...
The closing date is... That's a good question.
Sometime in the future.
It's the end of October. I think it's the Friday the 25th of October, something like that.
Michael, good luck with that.
Thanks, Ray.
You will need it. Okay.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Advice on vitamins and supplements for a healthier you at Allcare, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, every Friday we invite somebody in, look at the time, we invite somebody in to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today's the turn of celebrity restaurateur. Is that how you describe yourself, Nick Mounier?
Oh, I have no idea. Someone's starting again. I've done all that.
Nick Mounier.
Hey,
a former judge on Celebrity MasterChef. Thanks for coming in. Just before we get into your life and the sounds that you can remember, what about sounds in restaurants, music in restaurants?
Music as, I'm going to say a pun here, is It's a very important ingredient to an evening out. As long as it's not too loud, but it builds the evening up. Right. If you play the right music, that goes with the concept of...
You have a new restaurant, Le Perroquet.
Yeah.
What do you use, a Spotify playlist? Or
I
what?
Do.
And do you do it yourself or does somebody do it for you?
Yeah, no, I did it myself.
Did you do it yourself?
Yeah.
Right.
The only problem with Spotify is that the volumes go up and down. So you have to constantly...
Adjust
the right, volume. Okay. And then depending if you're sitting... Obviously, I understand if people are sitting under a speaker, you have to obviously...
Yes, they're getting
important, and what type of music you play. So I play kind of a jazzy set, French set, and then an upbeat set. So, but it's all toned correctly.
And would you know at a certain time of the evening then, would you change from your jazzy set to the upbeat set?
Yeah, what I'm saying, so if I start, say, we open at 6 o'clock, I start kind of slow and build it up. But as soon as you turn the music off, there's that whole thing just collapses. You know, people are talking, there's the clatter of glasses, knife and forks, whatever. But if it's too loud, then obviously people can't talk. So you need to really...
It's a thing that people don't give much thought to, the acoustics of a restaurant. Because I remember one particular restaurant in Dublin, and the acoustics were bad because there was... echoes.
Yeah.
So it was a very loud restaurant.
Yeah, no, it's not good. So you've got to place the speakers in the correct corners.
Place, right, there you go.
And it just enhances that experience, I think, because...
And are you a control freak? Because,
yes.
When it comes to... Yeah. Well, because, the fact that you do your own playlists and then you choose the colours and all that.
Well, see, I put a playlist that I generally believe I would like to listen to.
If you were in a restaurant.
Yeah, so if you're eating good food, you want good music, but not too loud.
Yeah.
Then you turn it up a little bit if it enhances your mood.
Yes.
If I'm working and I hear a great song, I put it up slightly.
Uh-huh.
And then bring it down if someone complains.
Okay,
how it works.
Right, Nick Mounier, soundtrack to your life. You were born in Kent in 1967 to Elaine and Jean.
Jean. They call him Jean in England, you know. Well, they used to, sorry.
Yeah. So I take it that your mum was from England and your dad was from
Paris. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And my mum was from Manchester. And then they met in Scotland at the Turnberry Hotel. They were both in catering.
Uh-huh.
But my dad was told to, when he was 19, he was working on the Champs-Élysées as a waiter, and his manager told him to go to England to learn English, but only stay for a year, because otherwise you'll get to the English way of life. So come back to France after a year, but he obviously ended up staying 35 years.
Because you met your mum?
Met my mum. Yeah. He was engaged 3 times before that.
Right.
I have to say that.
And how long were your parents together then?
54 years.
Right.
And he sadly passed away last July.
Oh.
Yeah, but these things happen, you know.
Sorry about that, of course.
But at least I was fortunate to have my father for a long period of time, think about it.
Yeah.
So, great man, great parents, you know. So
and both of them were in the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I grew up in that world, so...
What sort of a world was it?
A world where you have to, before you go up to school, you had to serve breakfasts, you come back from school, you do your homework, and then you serve afternoon tea to the customers, and in the evening you would serve the evening meal. So it was constant.
How big a hotel was it?
It was about 18 rooms we had. So it was constant. My mum did a lot of work up and down, so we were helping out the family all the time.
And did you live in the hotel?
Yeah, we used to choose our rooms when it was a quiet period, so we used to mix and match the rooms. You know, so you'd have your clothes.
Mix in room 20.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you're in number 4 today, you know.
Right, yeah.
So that's how it worked. Or you had to turf yourself out if someone was coming to stay.
Right. And where did you stay when it was full?
In the conservatory.
Right.
The blow-up bed. But my dad always denied that. But I always say, no, I slept in the conservatory, Dad.
Who else was in the family?
So I've got one brother who's older than me, who lives in France, in Brittany. He was in the army, and so he's remained in France. And I'm kind of the one who left and went to Ireland.
Were you aware of your dad being from a different country? Did you speak French as a child?
Oh, all the time. All my dad spoke was French when I was growing up. And then obviously my grandparents would come over a lot, or we would then go to France a lot when I was a child, because my parents worked a lot and then they were going on holiday on their own, and we'd obviously then go to my grandparents in France.
And you were very close to your granddad in particular?
Particularly my granddad. He had a lot of influence on me as a child, because he used to talk about the old days, you know, about the family tree of the life in Paris.
What was his name?
Ernest.
Ernest Mounier.
Ernest Mounier, great name.
What did he do for a living?
He was he worked in the perfumery in Paris on the shop floor, and my grandmother was in accounts.
Right.
So they were very honoured to have us as children and walking down the street and showing us off to all their friends and all that kind of
stuff. And they smelled lovely.
Oh, of course they did. So did I.
No, but the thing, that the one sense that jolts us back
back. Yeah, that jolts our memories. Yeah. Is smells, isn't it?
Well, that's what got me. 100%. And you have all those always in the house. And it could be the pillow, or it could be something, you know, because we always slept in the same room, because they literally had one living room space, a bedroom, and one kitchen. And the toilet was outside up the stairs in the Turkish toilet. So you're constantly having different smells going on around the wardrobe. You know, when you open the wardrobe,
yeah,
always different smells of their coats and their jumpers or whatever it was. Oh, yeah. Quite extraordinary. And that still resonates in my brain to this day.
Were you the only grandchildren they had?
We were the only grandchildren. Yes. So they doted on us all the time. So yes. My grandfather was a bon viveur. You know, he used to like his Ricard and his wine. And so we constantly spent hours at the table reminiscing about, well, he would talk about days in the war and all that kind of stuff. So, and then cousins would come in, and just great being a child, you know.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Until you give your sheep's brain to eat, you know, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily eat as a child, but then you obviously eat it. So, yeah.
What does it taste like?
It's very spongy.
Texture's not good.
No, it's not good. No, you need to drink lots of Coke with it.
What were you like as a child?
Growing up, I had a great childhood. I was quite a nervous child. Athletic, used to be outdoors a lot. Not many friends, but I used to be kind of the joker, trying to get more friends, and wasn't very academically bright at school. Always used to be daydreaming about playing football or being outside.
Yeah. And did you wear glasses?
Not at the time, no.
Because your glasses are sort of your trademark, aren't they?
They kind of become that. The only reason I needed glasses was when I was working for Marco at the time, and one of my friends said, let's go to that pub across the road, and I couldn't see it.
All right.
And so I had to go for an eyes test before going for my driving test, and that's how I got the glasses. Yeah.
How did, you know, growing up in a hotel, because it's a very different life, isn't it? Very different, like you describe making the breakfast, going to school, coming back to an afternoon tea, sleeping in room 14 or whatever.
Yeah, I used to hate it, actually, because I used to be
quite... And
It was a place called Folkestone, which is a dive. So right. I wouldn't recommend anybody to go. Awful. I couldn't wait to get out of the place.
The folks in Tourist Board have just...
I couldn't wait to get out of the place. It's awful. I used to hate it because I used to hate people in the sense that you'd hear them coming out of their rooms, going to the toilet or going to the bathroom. And I used to hate meeting people on the staircase. So I used to wait until they'd finished there.
Why did you? Why?
I don't know. I felt really antisocial about it. I just didn't like other people in the place.
Right.
And I just found it odd as a child.
What was it that, I wonder, was it that you thought it was your space? It was your house? And what were they doing in it?
Well, it's like sometimes you sit in the lounge watching TV and then these people will come in. And you're like, who are you?
Yes.
You know, this is my house.
It is odd, though, when you think about it.
It's very odd, because I used to hate it.
Yeah.
So that kind of a child disturbed me a little bit. But anyway, so that's why I couldn't wait to get out from my surroundings. So,
and did you feel, or were you advised to go into the hospitality industry or what?
I was heavily into fashion and music, and I wanted to be something with the creative part of life. And I suppose I was quite lazy. And I just fell into it. My parents used to say, you know, don't go into it. It's hard work, anti-social hours, you know. But they used to always talk about the good stories. So I was like, okay, I'll try it.
Sure.
But to be fair, it's a passport to go anywhere if you're good.
Mm.
So I started at the top and worked down. That's how I always say to people, work at the top and then work your way down, because then at least then you...
But you are bringing joy into people's life when it goes well.
Oh, I love this. Like, I could not do anything else. It's all I think about, to be fair. And it's actually, sometimes I'm a creature of habit, so I love to do the same thing day in, day out, and that's working in a restaurant serving people. And I've got my script, I've got the way I do things.
Yes.
And sometimes I get annoyed when people come into the business thinking it's easy. You've got to learn, and it's like doing presenting, you know, you've got to hone that craft.
Yes.
And earn your stripes. But everyone now wants to be a manager or
well, we were talking to Colin, was it Colin Harmon during the week, and he's written that book about how to run a cafe, and he runs successful cafes around Dublin. But it is that, and we were talking among ourselves, that everyone has a little bit of a, you know, a dream that they're going to run a B&B or a cafe or a restaurant, and it's
the romantic
tough
side.
And you've been there.
It's not that easy. No, you know? No. Everyone has that romantic notion, oh yes, I'm going to give up my day job and open a cafe. Believe me, you need the training.
Okay.
And the instinct.
We play a few, one clip anyway. This is from the TV of your childhood. Here
a genius.
I think there was a punk version of that as well.
I'd say there was,
yeah. Banana Splits. The great thing about talking to you is that because you spent a lot of time in France, your sounds are quite different and very French. So the song from your youth is this one by Serge Gainsbourg. That's how you pronounce it, isn't it?
Yeah, Gainsbourg, yeah.
I would have said Gainsbourg, but it's Gainsbourg.
Well, he actually did steal that name, didn't he, from the painter. That's not his actual name, okay.
You pronounce the title of the song for me.
Je suis venu to what is it? Yeah, je suis venu...
to dear something,
de, no. Je te, que je m'en vais, sorry.
Je suis venu to que je m'en vais. T'es là, on n'est pour rien changer. Comme dit si bien Verlaine, au vent mauvais. Je suis venu te dire que je m'en vais. Tu te souviens de
Serge Gainsbourg, and of course we will know him best for Je t'aime.
That's right, yeah.
Because that was huge at the discos when I was growing up.
It's mad. There was a customer that comes in every day and he specifically asks for that song and he drinks a Ricard and he reminisces about when he had the posters of Jane Birkin up on his bedroom wall.
Yes, because of duet with Jane Birkin.
In the 70s.
Yes.
It's quite extraordinary. So the music does provoke those memories of the past.
Yeah.
But for me, growing up in that kind of world was my dad always had French music on. It could have been from Charles Aznavour, you name it, to all the greats. And then my mother would have the Beatles on or Dave Brubeck jazz.
Oh, yeah.
So I just wrapped up with all that kind of, I think, great music. So I actually have that on the playlist in one.
Do you?
Because it's nice and light, doesn't offend anybody.
Yeah, it is. It does sound like restaurant music.
Yeah.
You just bring it up there again. Have we got it? There he goes.
Je suis venu te dire.
That gives me goosebumps. It's blowy.
Yeah.
What does it mean? Je suis venu te dire.
So I came to say that I'm going. So it's basically.
Oh, I came to say I'm going.
Yeah. Right. So it's a love story about the fact that I'm leaving.
Right. Okay.
But that's very tame for Serge. He was very scandalous, obviously, back in the day.
Yeah, well, Je t'aime was.
Well, Je t'aime was banned. That was banned. Yeah. Like actually the same thing with Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Relax.
Yes, that was banned too.
Kind of the same ilk of music in the sense of the lyrics. And there's one that he wrote called No Comment. And if you ever translate those lyrics, some people would be very offended.
Okay, well, maybe not.
We won't talk about it now. No, it's a family show.
So as a teenager, what were you like?
I love football. I love going out and exploring things. But I was very kind of melancholy as well. I had a double-edged sword because I could be an extrovert and an introvert at the same time. So I could go out there and be the sort of the part who will come back home and actually don't want to talk to anybody. So this business, obviously, why I'm doing it, I have no idea. You know, I perform and then I go home and not talk to anybody.
Right.
Because it's draining.
But you see, you do talk to a lot of people.
You talk to a lot of people, and then people then...
But you have social interaction as part of your
all,
work.
All the time.
Whereas a lot of people don't. So no, you're lucky in that respect.
Yeah, so sometimes you think it's odd to go home and not talk to anybody. Because, you know, and it's very hard to maintain friendships in this business because if you're working in excess of, say, I'm not going to say the hours I do, but a lot of hours, it's very hard to maintain
Of course it would be, yes.
Yeah, and then you've got your kids to look after. Obviously, I've got children now, so that's very important. And also, you've got to look after yourself in the sense of having a bit of downtime for your own thoughts because otherwise you'll explode, you know?
It's a tough one.
Yeah, that's why I drink, to be fair.
But that's not good, you see.
It's not good. Well, you've got to unwind.
But there's other ways of unwinding.
Oh, no, I get that. But I mean, as long as you don't abuse it, you know, you still got to perform every day.
Yes.
So,
But
it's just nice to have that unwinding with a cigarette. You know, I like that part of the day.
That's your thing.
It is my thing. That's your thing. You know,
why did you end up in Ireland or how did you end up in Ireland?
Back in the day, I was actually made redundant. I was made redundant about three times in the UK back in the day. And
as a waiter or as a.
Well, a friend of ours was a restaurant manager. And, unfortunately, you know, we've seen three recessions or four in my lifetime, and one particular place obviously had to let us go. They didn't want me to let me go, and so I went home with the tail between my legs. Went home to mum, sat on the bottom of the stairs with the AA guide. But it was actually, you remember the AA guide?
Yeah.
I opened it up and closed my eyes, opened the page, and it was the K Club.
Right.
And I thought, okay, they're the ones I'm going to call up, and by luck, they were looking for a restaurant manager. but the interview was in the Westbury Hotel in London. I think I've told this story quite a few times, but anyway, Ray Carroll was an amazing, or he was amazing GM of the hotel, and I met with him 2 weeks later in the Westbury Hotel in London, and I arrived at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I always remember, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there was about 20 guys outside this bedroom that he rented for the interviews, and I was number 10, and I went in, and he asked me 3 questions. What was my favourite film? Who was my favourite actor? And who was what was my favourite song?
That
was
right. It.
And that's how I got the job.
You know what you answered?
It was Robert De Niro.
Right.
The Deer Hunter.
Right.
And Serge Gainsbourg, I think it was at the time.
And he gave you the job.
And he said, so I got 2 out of 3 because obviously he liked The Deer Hunter and he liked Robert De Niro. He said, so you must have a good character. You're hired.
Good taste.
Good taste.
Right.
And I arrived in London a week later with everything. But the problem is, in those days, there was no sat-nav, so I had the paper map.
Yes.
So instead of going to North Wales, I was going to South Wales. So I missed my boat and I arrived in Ireland 10 hours later. And then had to start my shift the next day. Anyway, it's hilarious. But yes, that's how I stayed in the K-Club.
The K-Club, right. We're speaking to Nick Mounier. He's guiding us through the soundtrack to his life. We have to take a quick commercial break. We'll talk to Nick more after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. For all your back-to-school essentials and health advice this September, All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nick Mounier is here guiding us through the soundtrack to his life. They're very helpful, our listeners. Tell Nick in Spotify settings there's a normalised volume setting.
Okay.
It sets same volume for all songs. It'll save him a lot of running around and twiddling knobs.
Gene, thank you so much. Deserve
Nick,
a drink.
Can't wait to eat in his new place. And Nick sounds lovely today. I was born in 67 too. Good stock, says Lisa. And ooh, what a voice. That's not yours, it's Serge Gainsbourg's. Or maybe it is yours.
Thanks.
Maybe it is yours.
Thanks.
Maybe
I can do say.
Maybe it is yours. How did you end up working for Marco Pierre White?
There was a job opportunity going. I was getting to the end of my time in the K Club, and I heard there was a job going. I rang Marco very nervously. I rang him, and he sounded like Mick Jagger. And I thought, oh God, and I rang him at the wrong time because he obviously was joint service, which you should never do. So I got my hand slapped there, and then I rang him back, and same thing. He goes, hello, lovey, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. What are you up to? Can you start in a week's time? That was it. So I literally left the K Club, put everything back in the back of the car, and drove to London, and took me ages to find like a bedsit back in those days, yeah, bedsit. And I started.
Was that the 80s or the 90s?
That was the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 1994.
Then you were on. The first time we saw you on telly was Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen. So then I left Marco after about 10, 12 years. I was called the boomerang because I used to go, had enough, and then I would go back to Marco. Because in those days, it was kind of like the mafia, where you couldn't go to Gordon Ramsay, you couldn't go to Nico Landis. You had to work for Marco Pierre White because otherwise you'd be the black sheep of the family. And he always looked after me. I have to say, he was the best boss. I know he's having a few things going on now, but he was the best boss I've ever worked for because that was an amazing era to be at that standard.
Yes.
I went from the 2-star Michelin. I was fortunate to be part of the team to going from two to three. And it was amazing. And it was so zany. It was just wasn't like I've worked in Gibbo's, and Gibbo's is great, but a bit too stuffy and a bit too serious. And I was trying to get a bit of fun on the floor, but you can't. But Marco's, it was amazing because you could be funny and zany and mad, and he was mad anyway.
Yeah.
And he'd bring out these new paintings and stop service.
But a genius, obviously.
Absolute genius. But a great memory. You see, that's the genius of a good intelligent person, is the memory. Like, my memory is terrible, so my genius is terrible. But he was a genius, right?
Okay,
I have to work on my genius.
Remembering names and...
Names, recipes, right? He could just tell you a recipe within seconds of just eating it.
The knowledge,
you see, the knowledge was king in that.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to work in that environment and to get that knowledge made you more confident. But people perceive that as arrogance. It's not arrogance, it's confidence. And that's a huge part of this business. Sometimes people think you're arrogant because you know it all. It's not. It's you've got to learn your craft and understand your craft and do the same thing day in, day out to get where you want to be. So it then becomes flawless. You know, how many times of us have been out to a restaurant and the service is terrible?
Yeah.
It's because everyone thinks they can be a waiter. Front of house. It's instinct. It's gut feeling. And that's how I managed to be the way I am now. Because all I do is work. And I love it. But it's not work, though. It's a vocation. And people think I'm crazy, but I love it.
Are you happy?
I'm content. I'm excited. That's the
excited, like, right?
I'm on my new path, as they say. Right. Because, you know.
What age are you? 67? You're 52.
How old do
52.
I look?
Well, right. you're looking. You don't look at over 51.
Oh, yeah.
No.
52. 52 and counting.
And was it daunting taking on a new project? Because you're saying third time lucky. So you've had two restaurants.
Had
in
Pichet
Dublin.
Yeah. At 42.
Yeah.
So it's an epiphany moment. I analysed it. I opened Pichet at 42, and the same thing, like everyone wanted to open their own thing. I was fortunate to be able to open it at 42. And then through, obviously, I'm not going to talk about it because I can't, through certain things, I sold my shares. And then through sheer arrogance, I thought I'll open it across the road, right, to my detriment. City boy. And ended up spending all my money, losing everything. And then there was the time of the Brexit, bloody stupid Brexit, and I lost 25% of an apartment that I was selling to force feed the business to save it.
Right.
Because I was trying to save the dream. I should have just let it go. And so I had to then obviously hide for a couple of months, 3 months. And it was Frank Gleeson, of all people, who saved me again, who rang me, because there wasn't many people ringing me, to be fair. It was quite daunting. And I didn't have much money. And it was Frank who kind of gave me my confidence back, and that was how we kind of got talking about opening something else.
What did you do in that time? Just pull the curtains and...
It was horrific, to be fair.
Was it?
Yeah. I wasn't depression, because I was actually quite an optimistic person. I just kept going. I went to the gym, would you believe? Went back to see my mother, because I always do. I always go back to my mother. My partner helped me, Alana Feeney. But it was just... the fear factor of, oh my God, is this it? Is it over? And that was the biggest heartache for me.
But you could go back and be a front of house person. And
not for anybody else, though. You see,
would you not?
I love...
Do you ever think of that? You know, going back, doing front of house, at the end of the night saying, thank you very much, I'll take my tips, I'll see you tomorrow night.
No, because it doesn't work that way, because you often work with people that know less than you, and that's not an arrogant way of saying, but it's hard to go to somebody else's place that you maybe possibly...
And work for them.
Yeah, for work for them. And I did do that for a while, and I found it really hard going, and internally I was dying, is the word. So, and it's just a thing inside, you know, I had to succeed. Failure wasn't an option. And so I said, I've got to do something. This cannot be the end, is what I was saying. I'm not going to be able to go to work and enjoy it if I'm working for somebody else. And that was me, and that's just me, you know? Because when you analyse the amount of restaurants and bars and hotels there are in town, I was thinking, where am I going to go? Who do I really
and
want
the
to
number,
work for?
The number that fail as well. Look, you'll have to come back in and we'll talk about this.
We haven't done any music yet.
I know.
So I was getting all melancholy there, sorry.
That's the way it goes some days.
Apologies, yeah.
Well, listen, we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Ray.
With Le Perroquet, which is on the top of Leeson Street there.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And good luck. Amazing, I love it. Thanks, Ray. Pleasure. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Siobhan. Gramagat Marian Nihuluan for Nocht 51551 Red RTE.ie. Now, you'll probably know by now, but RTE Radio 1, as part of our Rugby World Cup coverage, want to send you and a friend all the way to the final in Japan. If you're interested, have a listen to this.
Rugby World Cup Japan 2019. RTE Radio 1's got you covered. And as part of our coverage, we want to send you and a friend all the way to the final. For your chance to win return flights to Japan, a four-night stay in Tokyo, tickets to the final, and €1,000 spending money, answer this question. The winner of the 2015 Rugby World Cup was A, New Zealand, or B, England. To enter, text the word Japan, followed by your answer and name to 57111. Cost of entry is €1. Lines close at 11 a.m. on Monday the 30th of September. Don't text after that time, as you will be charged, but your entry will not be included. This competition is open to residents of the Republic of Ireland only, over 18s, and terms and conditions apply. See rte.ie/competitions, where the lucky winner will also be revealed.
And good luck with that. Good luck with that. Of course, Ireland play Japan in the morning. And we'd hope to win that. And we'd hope to beat Samoa. And we'd hope to beat Russia. And we'd hope to be playing
South Africa in the quarterfinals. A woman who knows all that sort of detail about rugby is Amy Huberman.
Is this about rugby?
Joins the Studio 10. Actor and writer. And
Come on, Ireland.
Come on, Ireland. Yeah. Yes. Do you discuss it at all, the rugby, with Brian?
A bit, but I think that too much time has passed and my questions are too basic that I've kind of missed the window learning. I feel like I should know more than I do. I do a little bit. It's great when he's there and he's watching and then I can kind of feed off his knowledge, but no.
And do people expect you to know about rugby because you are who you are?
I think I think my dearth of knowledge has been quite evident over the years that I think people just won't go there. But no, I'm a big sport and it's so exciting for them and I'll be getting up setting my alarm for early in the morning.
Yeah. It's great that they're on that early. You can watch it.
I'm up anyway.
And you still have the full day ahead of you. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're not be hanging around till 5 o'clock waiting.
No, it's great. And it feels like, because, you know, I'm at home watching the matches with my kids and Brian is working at the games. So, I don't know, it's kind of reminiscent of watching World Cup football when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like having little World Cup parties. So it's great.
And did you travel to any of the World Cups that Brian played in?
Yeah. So it was Australia with the Lions and then New Zealand for that World Cup. I can't even remember what year that was.
It was a few years ago. An odd number anyway.
Then there was France as well. And so, no, listen, it was, and they were great days.
What do girlfriends and wives do?
We have a lot less of a stressful time. Right. We go and sightsee. Right. No, it's great because you're with a crew of friends and family and partners, and it's really lovely. And you know, especially in New Zealand, like myself and the girls who I'm still great friends with, we went to Queenstown and we went on our own adventure. Yeah. We're not stressing as much in between matches. Then you go and support the matches. It's really great, and we get to travel to such brilliant places. Yeah. But you know, I miss those days in a way, but I don't miss the stress of match day, because you know when your other half is playing, it's so much more. You've got so much more invested, and you know how much they've worked.
And then when they lose,
and it's the high and the low of it, and how much it means to them. And then you know if somebody's played badly, or if they've lost, or if they've won. But listen, they're well used to it, and it comes with the game. So all you can do is
find his mood is at a more even keel now.
Probably.
Boots are brilliant. They're your boots, aren't they? Your boots.
That sounds like I'm wearing like rugby boots. No, these are not. These are non-rugby boots. These are the
Autumn Winter Bourbon Shoe Collection by Amy Huberman.
Not good for playing rugby in.
No. It's bourbonfootwear.com. Yeah. How many collections have you done now over the years?
This is going into our 7th year.
Is it?
Yeah, which I can't believe.
And are they all named after movies or something like that?
Listen, these are called Coyote Ugly. We're going to have to go into sequels and prequels and everything at this stage, because there's a lot in the collection, and it's been 7 years of two collections a year.
All named after movies, right?
And initially I was like matching up the boot with like what looked a little bit meta with the shoe, and then now we're just going, oh my God, is there enough films left?
Yeah. But, so give us an example of some of the names that are in this collection.
We've had so many over there. I mean, we've had all my favourite movies, and we've had Bridesmaids and Pretty Woman, and these are Coyote Ugly, but there's every film I think you could name at this stage.
Yeah. The Commitments.
I don't know if we've had the Commitments. I think maybe we have at some stage over the years, yeah. And if we haven't, then we will.
They'll be dedicated to you. Bourbonfootwear.com. They're brilliant.
Yeah, they're good. These are a nice little soft pink colour. It wasn't great with the rain this morning, and I was like, I'm going to have to change into a pair of biker boots. So we've got, these are our little suede ones, and there's leathers, and there's... we've got, I think, 160 with different colours and everything in the collection for autumn winter. So, yeah, going
you
into our 7th year.
You have the dream job, don't you?
We moved house recently, all it was boxes of shoes. I was embarrassed.
Because you just got to have those and have those. What do I wear tonight? Yeah, maybe Coyote Ugly.
I know. Equipments. But actually, I have to get rid of them. There would be nowhere left for the rest of the family. I'd be fine with it, but they may have an issue with it.
How often now would you change your shoes of a morning? Like, if you're going out to something, would you go through, you know, looking in the mirror going, not really.
I mean, my day to day is usually runners or flat boots.
No, but if you're going out to something where members of the public are going to see, or you're going to be photographed.
I think I'd take a bit of time to figure out what I was going to wear. Yeah. Yeah, but that's a process that you'd have a lead-in time for. So if I was going out with my girlfriends or anything like that, it would probably be the clothes all over the floor. But yeah, I think if I have something to go to, I would kind of prep beforehand because I don't want to be in that situation, especially if it's a work thing and you've got other things to concentrate on. Don't want to be in the situation where you're having to worry about that.
Do that in advance. That's good advice, isn't it?
I have to. And then if it's to do with weather or your mood changes with it, but for the most part, I'd be organised with that.
The last time you were in with your dad, how was he?
Yeah, he's okay. He's good.
Yeah.
He's still painting away. I know when we were in with you last time, we were on his book, his book and the story that he'd written for his cousin, and he's doing good. I mean, he's battling with his condition, and he's, I mean, it's
Parkinson's,
probably six months since we're here. Yeah. And he falls a lot, and it's difficult. It is difficult for him, and he's got really compromised mobility from it. But he still paints. He's such a prolific painter. He paints about 3 paintings a day.
A day?
I know. Well, some days he can, and he loves it. And he really, I mean, I've never seen someone so focused that when he goes in and he's painting. And it is, he can't with Parkinson's, he can't write and he can't hold the pen anymore, but he can paint with a paintbrush, which is kind of extraordinary. And he loves it. And I mean, he's always been creative and artistic.
Yeah, it's an output for his creativity.
It is. Yeah. And he just gets consumed by it, which is lovely that he's able to do it and that he loves doing it.
And he, I remember, because we spoke to him about it and I spoke to you about it before, he was in the rags trade,
the rag trade, as
they call it. So his thing was Crombie coats, was it? Or
oh,
Crombie?
Gosh, that's not a word I know. Maybe, probably. No,
Crombie. Isn't
maybe.
Crombie? Yes, is the name of a coat, yeah.
Maybe.
Did you ever hear of a Crombie coat? No.
I don't, maybe I have. he did weekender coats. He did a lot of cashmere coats.
Right.
And they were beautiful, beautiful coats. And I've...
Were they for women or men?
For women.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and... I mean, I didn't really appreciate them at the time when I should have. I was a teenager for when he was kind of at the height of what he was doing. And I just wore bomber jackets and X-Works jeans. And my mum was like, you'll regret this one day. And I do. But actually, do you know what? It's lovely. Some people that I don't know, strangers, have messaged me and said, I have a coat of your dad's and I don't need it anymore. And so I have a lot of his coats now, and I'm going to, alter them and mix them up. But they're beautiful.
Is there a Huberman label inside?
Yeah, on the inside of it, is so lovely.
Yeah, you just want to be careful, though.
Why?
Yeah, look at her with her name tag. What does she think she is?
It's like being in school with your name written on the back. Just like, gosh, she's a bit precious now. With her. Don't touch my coat. I just got my name stitched on the inside.
You don't need my ticket for the thing. My name's on the inside.
Yeah. They'd be like, Jane, notions on your woman.
So busy, busy, busy. The boots and still writing away.
Yes.
For TV
No, not books at the moment. So writing for TV. So we've fingers crossed that we'll get Finding Joy series 2 over the line. So we're kind of gearing towards that. So fingers crossed, that we'll get that done soon.
So you're just waiting for word, is that it?
Kind of. And like, look, these things, it's a juggling act, and there's funding and there's this and there's casting and there's crew and everything. So my producers are in Treasure, amazing, and they're mostly doing, that grunt work, and I'm just like faffing in my office writing scenes. Huh. And I'm like, after 2 hours, I'm like, I think I'm done for the day. but a lot of things have to fall into place for things to
it's
get going.
It's a brilliant time for people like yourself, women, actors, writers, all the whole package.
Yeah. No, and
Aisling B.
Yeah, Aisling, amazing.
Roisin Conaty.
Fantastic.
The lady who did Fleabag, which I haven't seen.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, it's brilliant. You should see that. It's really, really great. And it's brilliant to see this, the platform opening up and people being able to tell their stories and it being receptive and these shows being stellar. And, it was always like niche and it's like, female comedy. But now it's opening up more. And hopefully we won't have to distinguish both.
That thing Jenny showed me, and we still don't know if it's real or a skit.
Oh.
A group of men on a late night American talk show.
Oh, I saw that.
Talking about women in comedy, yeah.
Was it a skit?
Was it a skit or was it real?
I thought it was quite depressingly real.
Right.
Maybe it was a skit. If it was a skit, they were very good actors.
Maybe it was a skit. We have to figure that out. But they were saying that women
are funny. I know, isn't that
go
cast?
On. Yeah.
But it was just the way it was just seen as such the other, and it's you're like, nah, God love them for trying. thing. Yeah, that was
I think they said girl was funny once, sort of thing.
Oh, good for her. Oh, no, only because she was parroting a male.
Was that it?
That's the only way we can be funny. Oh, my goodness. But I hadn't heard that it was a skit.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's probably just depressing me, quite real.
If it is a skit, they're very good actors. And there was one that was smoking a cigar as well.
I don't know. Maybe when was it filmed then?
Yeah,
somebody smoking a cigar. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, there you think. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
That dates it.
Yeah.
Now, you said something during the snow once and it ended up in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
What was it? Irish born and bred.
When we all had cabin fever and we weren't allowed to leave. Yeah, I tweeted something about it because there was the bread shortage.
Yes.
And everyone was freaking out about the bread during the snow. And it was coming up to St. Patrick's Day and I sent a tweet saying somebody should make an Irish born and bred, B-R-E-A-D, for Paddy's Day. Somebody then linked me in with Hairy Baby and we messaged each other, myself and Dara, who owns it and runs it.
T-shirts.
And,
we did it for
Focus Ireland and we raised a great bit of money for Focus Ireland. So actually, we're doing another charity, as Dara calls them.
Very good.
I know, it's very good. He likes no pun as much
t-shirt.
As myself.
Charity t-shirt.
Yeah. So I'm an ambassador for Plan International Ireland and it's the UN International Day of the Girl Child next month. That's not easy to say.
No.
So for the month of October, we are doing a charity. So they're on sale on hairybaby.com and all of the profits are going to go to Plan International and the work they do. And it's highlighting International Day of the Girl and they work in a lot of the poorest countries around the world and there's unfortunately still so many barriers and injustices facing young girls. If you're a girl in the developing world, you're much more likely to live in extreme poverty, be denied education. A lot of young girls are forced into marriage when they're still children. So they're doing a lot of great work in those countries to work with their families and their communities. So this is our fundraiser this year for that. So it's called This Colleen Can.
This Colleen Can,
yeah,
This Girl Can.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
good, yes.
So, and they're on sale. So go for it if you want to do your bit for charity today. Yeah.
Amy, great to see you.
Lovely to see you. Thanks
good
for having
everything.
Me. Thanks a million.
Boots, programs, books, Brian, and t-shirts.
Yeah, there we go. I like it.
Yeah. Amy Hummer, thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy. At AllCare, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A lot of opinions on the Eurovision. We may come back to that next week. Camille O'Sullivan is back in Studio 10. Hello again.
Hello.
Saturday, 19th of October in the Olympia Theatre in Dublin.
Yeah.
And then you're in the Ballina Arts Centre as well.
Yes, on the 12th of October.
Sunday, 12th of October, the week previously. Camille Sings Cave Live is the CD which is out.
Coming soon, yeah.
Coming soon. I have one in my hand.
I have it here.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to sing a song from that.
Yeah. Well,
What is it about Nick Cave songs?
I just think he's the most amazing kind of storyteller and I just think some of the best love songs I've ever written. It just gets to kind of like the most spiritual part of the heart, but then also his band, when they go crazy, they go for it in that way too. So I just love the whole dynamic and just fantastic writer.
Yeah.
I suppose along the lines of Cohen and Dylan and stuff, you know. And maybe it's the melancholy black humour in me as an Irish person.
And I suppose you found that they suit you as well.
Yeah, they do. I mean, a lot of very kind, like even when we did this tour in Australia in Melbourne where he's from, like you'll get people going, right, you do Cave, I want to hear, and you're like, oh Jesus. And
no pressure.
Then they say, oh, you've totally told his, because for me it's about telling a story and inhabiting it, and I have a female voice, but they say you've told it in such a different way and we never heard the lyrics like that. So it's not singing it like him.
I
tour with them in the band.
Songs.
Yeah.
I could listen to Camille forever. Now there is someone to take to any restaurant, says Killian. We were talking about restaurant music. I don't think he wants to take
it
to dinner.
I love this.
What do you want to think about? You've 2 minutes, Camille.
Okay,
sorry,
are you the one?
Okay.
Been waiting for...
Beautiful again. Fergal, that was beautiful. Camille O'Sullivan,
thank you so much. Thank you.
Apologies to Drive Time, but I think they'll...
Sorry, Drive Time.
Don't mind that. Mary Wilson on the way. We are back on the telly tomorrow, on the radio on Monday. Have a great weekend. Good luck.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand, who recently welcomed 17 new pharmacies to the All Care family.